Okay.
Hey, Internet, welcome back to Mind Vector. Today is January the 15th. If you've been listening to us regularly, please support us with a like and a subscribe. We are now on Spotify. We're working on getting on more platforms. Right now, YouTube has been our main platform. We're also on BitChute, and we are still looking to expand right now.
Woo!
Woohoo. So, today we're going to be talking about meditation a bit. So, I know I've been talking to you occasionally about meditating. Have you had any new thoughts on giving it a whack?
Not like the formal form of meditation, but I wanted to ask you how you got into meditation first off, because you're very knowledgeable on everything with meditation, and you've done it a lot longer. But no, I have not formally meditated. I just kind of like do deep breaths when I need it. But yeah, I wanted to ask you how you got into it.
That's kind of the start, basically, like just paying attention to your breathing.
Yeah.
So there's different types of meditation, though. It's also a little confusing too when you're coming in, because a lot of them are the same type of meditations, but with different names, or people will add like a small spin to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I got into meditation because I got into Buddhism, and I got into Buddhism because I listen to YouTube a lot while I'm playing video games, and eventually they recommended a tech talk to me, a Google tech talk. There was a Buddhist
good old TED Talks. Yeah.
No, this was I think it was called Google Tech Talks. I haven't seen them in a while. I don't know if they still do those, but I got a video recommended to me called Be Your Own Therapist. And it was a speech by a Buddhist nun. Her name is Robina Corden. And I started listening to her Dharma talks on and off. And eventually I started looking for more and more monks and that were on YouTube, and eventually learning more and more about Buddhism. So that led to me looking up to see if there was any temples nearby that I could go. And I went and started learning. But
so you just decided to go find a temple one day and then just went, just dropped in?
Basically. It was kind of awkward because I'd never really been to a religious function, like not since I was really young. I've never been by myself, but I showed up to this new place not knowing what to expect other than I had read online that they do hold meditation sessions there. So I go, and I was a little late, like 5 or 10 minutes late, and the doors were closed. I don't know if they were locked or not, but I remember not. There was a lot of doors on the front of it. Like, the stairs were pretty high, so you'd go up all these stairs, and the temple was just up there. And there were, like, I think 5 doors on the front.
Like gates?
No, just doors to the building.
Oh. So you're like, which one's the entrance?
Yeah, so which one is the one that I need to...
Yeah.
So I just kind of started pulling on a few, and none worked. And I saw lights were on in there, so I actually knocked, which... So a guy pokes his head out, and he was the meditation instructor. And I'm like, hey, I heard you guys have meditation here. And he's like, yeah, come on in. You're in the right place. So I came in late, knocking, interrupted the whole thing. But
yeah, fuck up everybody.
But yeah, no one was, you know, said anything about it. So, but to answer your original question, basically the two fundamental types of, well, there's three. I would say there's three fundamental types of meditation in Buddhism. The one I practice the most is called Vipassana, which is also referred to as insight meditation or
transcendental.
I don't remember what the other names that they call it, but they all kind of lead to the same thing. So Vipassana, there's another one called Samatha meditation, which is concentration or focus meditation, and another one called Metta, which is loving kindness meditation or compassion meditation. So
wow, that's pretty broad. Yeah.
Yeah, so those are the three types that I've practiced. But the one I do the most is Vipassana. And in Vipassana meditation, the way you can start off is, I think a lot of people kind of go over the top with it and start fixating on too much. But basically, starting off, if you don't want to fixate on your posture and everything too much, you would just sit somewhere and you would close your eyes and breathe. And as you're breathing, you just watch your breath, the sensation of your abdomen. As you're breathing in, you'll notice that there's a rising feeling in your abdomen. And inside your head, you would just note that and you would say, rising. And then when you're exhaling, you'll feel that sensation of your abdomen falling or lowering. So then you can say, falling. And you can do that, like, maybe for 15 minutes starting off. They would say at the least do it for 1 minute a day. A lot of monks that I've listened to have said that, and a couple that I spoke to at the temple have said that. At least try to do one a day, 1 minute a day. Yeah. So
that's the thing that why I've never, like, really done it, because I have kids. So, and unless they're unconscious, it's, like, really hard to get some quiet time. Even for just the podcast. So I'm like, when the fuck am I going to meditate? I'd rather just pass the fuck out and just go to sleep. But yeah, I've found that I've had, back when I used to like be really into makeup and shit, I would get into like this zone of being just really focused on the task that I was doing. And then like my mind would just kind of start drifting after a bit. But I feel like my brain tends to go into that meditative thing, like no matter what I'm doing, if I'm not like interrupted.
What you're describing is actually something in Taoism. They call it a state of flow.
Yeah, like a flow. Yeah, I've heard that term, flow state. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's basically when you get absorbed in whatever you're doing, which that kind of comes into the second type of meditation, the concentration meditation.
Mm-hmm.
They also call it tranquility meditation for concentration, because you don't really gain much insight, but you do kind of distract yourself in a way. So
yeah, it was like really, it was like my Zen time, like my time to me time, you know, aside from putting myself together, but just kind of just, you know.
Yes. Yeah. So when you're doing that one, the benefits of concentration meditation is that you can calm yourself down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always joke about it because I'm a Walking Dead nerd, but there's a scene in The Walking Dead where these two little girls, whenever one would start freaking out, her sister would always tell her just to look at the flowers, which is a very Buddhist thing to do because they're not aware of it, but they're trying to get that little girl to focus on something so that she can relax her emotions. So that's essentially the benefits of being able to concentrate or focus on something for a long period of time. People do start saying that they have experiences and stuff like that if they've done it for a while. Like any type of meditation, they can start getting experiences that are unique to themselves. Some people, it depends on your level of concentration. And that's kind of where you start getting into like the mystic territory and all that.
Ooh.
But
what's the mystic territory? What is that about?
That's where people start thinking that they're having visions and that type of thing. But at least in the school of Buddhism that I like, Theravada, they recommend to kind of stay away from that because you can just get lost in another form of delusion.
That seems like you would need to be like under some kind of guidance and stuff.
Yeah, and it's
come back.
It's easy to distract you from the path of trying to get out of samsara, which is, you know, the cycle of rebirth and everything.
Oh, damn.
Now you start getting to the point where you're focusing on all these magical powers or whatever that they say you can get, at least in the like the mystic religious part of Buddhism. I don't want to say the magical thinking part because it's kind of disrespectful, but the worldly version of it.
Ooh, but that's all. That's so funny how the brain can just do that. There's like so much in there that we don't tap into. Like on a daily basis.
Yeah. That's a lot of it comes from us probably being so distracted by so many things at once. So you're able to actually apply yourself and get absorbed in it, there is a state of serenity that comes with it. As a lot of people have experienced, if you can find something you like to do and it's like you're dancing almost. And Alan Watts has said that a couple of times, that sometimes when you get really into something, it's like a dance. And I think he's phrased life to be that way. Once you're actually in the state of flow when it comes to life itself. But
for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so they teach us mostly insight. With the school of Buddhism, they focus more on Vipassana meditation. That one's to basically get you to deal with your emotions better. It helps you deal with your emotions and to realize that everything is impermanent. That way you don't cultivate a wrong way of looking at things like they're going to make you happy, they're going to be forever. Because if, you know, that's the natural thing that humans do. And if you do that, you're going to wind up suffering in a lot of ways. So
yeah, you can't act based on your temporary emotions, because your actions are going to, they're going to surpass your temporary state of that emotion, you know?
Right.
So that's one thing that I did notice once I started kind of separating myself from, you know, whatever was happening, whatever chaotic thing my kids were getting into, and just kind of pausing and just even just counting to 10 or taking a minute or two. That, I mean, previously I was just reacting and it wasn't doing anybody any good. But once I got into that practice a little bit more, you know, not formally meditating, but yeah, just having that distance between your emotion and the situation and separating the two was really helpful for me.
Yeah, I would recommend trying. I've done it before, but again, I would recommend trying it, because I hate to sound like a broken record, because when people get upset, I always recommend it to them, but really, it did a lot for me. It helped me in a lot of ways, so that's kind of my go-to. Like, hey, this worked for me, you might want to give it a shot, but obviously I don't want to force it on anybody.
Yeah, but it's that ego. I mean, it feels good to just fucking yell and scream and whatever, but yeah. It's just for you. That's really selfish.
Yeah.
So selfish. So do they play like any music and stuff when you're like in the temple meditating, or is it just kind of silent?
It's silent.
It's
silent.
Or sometimes they like hum or something. I don't know.
If you're sitting there like listening to music, that's more so just relaxing, not meditating.
Oh, okay. Chilling. Everybody's just chilling. Gotcha.
Yeah, like that's kind of a Western thing that everyone like. It's the difficulty of words, because when people hear meditation, the first go-to association is usually to contemplate something. So I remember one girl that I knew, when I spoke to her about spirituality and stuff like that, she was a Christian, and I used to be a Christian when I was younger, but eventually fizzled out, and I went into kind of like a nihilism state, went agnostic, atheist, nihilistic, and Buddhism is what kind of knocked out the latter two. Now I'm kind of more of a an agnostic that kind of just finds the fun in the absurdity of the world. So, but with her, when I brought that up to her, she always said that, well, I pray. And pray is it's interesting, but it's not exactly the same thing.
Mm.
Prayer is good in the sense that it sets an intention, which is something right. that Buddhists do like. They like the notion of setting an intention, but you can also kind of veer with that too, because they have the dynamic of believing that there's a God that's going to be able to manipulate things to whatever they like or whatever they hope God's plan is, and they hope that his plan for them is favorable. So
they do have a God, like a higher power kind of thing.
Well, Buddhism, it spread out of Nepal and India, and it kept growing outward. So as the philosophy grew, it incorporated some of the mystical ways of thinking in the territories that already existed. Like you see that a lot in religion, where different the geography and the cultures, once they start overlapping, the religions start to blur too. Like Sikhism is kind of an example of that.
There's like a lot of hybrid.
Yeah, basically they're like hybrid thought. Religions. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of a good like layman way to think about it. And when it comes to prayer, at least, prayer also has that, like I was saying, it has that dynamic of you thinking that someone else could basically solve whatever's bothering you or whatever you wish to change.
Mm-hmm.
And with Buddhism, the objective of prayer would be just to kind of clarify whatever your intention is going to be, so you're not praying to another entity. So, yeah, in Buddhism, they kind of believe in like samsara. Samsara isn't just earth. It encompasses heaven, hell, purgatory, all of that. So they believe that nothing is permanent. they just believe that there's three reasons that we suffer. We suffer because of ignorance, aversion, and attachment.
Yeah.
So even when you're in heaven, there's still a degree of suffering that would come because, this is from the Buddhist perspective at least, like, let's say you get reborn as an angel in whatever religion you believe in. Like, let's say if you're a Christian, because, you know, we're Westerners, that's where our religious fundamentals are, is Westerners, Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say you get reborn into a heaven realm and you're an angel and you're like, this is awesome. Like, you know, you can fly, you can do whatever. But Buddhists put forth that nothing is forever. So for like higher beings, they believe that their suffering lies in the fact that they don't realize that nothing is forever. So they think, hey, I'm an angel. I made it. I can just enjoy the rest of eternity. And it's like, well, no, eventually your actions are going to kind of lead your mind to a different form. And if you're not building up good actions, you may end up going up or down the karmic scale, so to say.
Oh, so like, I think in my next life, I'll be probably like a lizard or something.
Well, that means you really messed up. You went from human to lizard.
I'll come back as a fucking protozoan and shit.
I don't know what you did to go from human to lizard. That's not good.
Okay, so the life, the scale of the life form. Gotcha. So even the angels can't remain angels then. They might get bumped back down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's the difference. Like, Buddhism doesn't rule out Christianity or the other religions. There's space for them within Buddhist cosmology. It's just that they don't believe it's forever. So even if you get reborn as a god, like, the good karma, the good karma that could get you to being born as a god basically can eventually fade away if you're not doing more good things.
But you got to maintain.
You may live so long that you think that you're immortal. So that's kind of where that's where reality is going to bring some suffering to you.
So for them, even like someone who's a Christian, say, can be too attached to being a Christian or, you know, whatever religion they are. That's like a sub, like a layer.
Yeah, it really is. Like, it's even Buddhism itself suffers from that, too. Like, they start talking about that in Buddhism, that you're just supposed to use the teachings like a boat. And once you get to your destination, put them aside and, you know, just be aware of your surroundings, so to say.
Yeah, you got it's like adaptation then. They kind of really foster that.
Yeah. They do.
You gotta adapt.
But all ideologies for the most part try to incorporate adaptation, because if they don't, they die. So like, as peaceful as Buddhism is, like, there's always the tropes that they're pacifist or whatever. That's not always the case. Like, if you've ever heard of Shaolin monks, they practiced martial arts because they kept getting annihilated. Their temples kept getting raided by I think Muslims and barbarians. So,
damn.
At the time, they had to learn a way to defend themselves. Otherwise, the Dharma would have left the world. The teachings and everything would have just been lost.
Right. Damn. So, aside from like mental powers, like your own endogenous like ability to meditate, do they use like other methods, like tools, like shortcuts? I don't know, herbs, spices, substances, stuff like that.
Some Buddhists do, but you're not supposed
to. Yeah, incense. You know,
THC, mushrooms, CBD. DMT.
Ayahuasca.
But all of those things,
so it's kind of frowned upon then? Or
yeah, it's frowned upon because it's considered a intoxicant. Like, I'd say that Theravada Buddhism is a lot more secular. It's more worldly, and you don't get lost in all the metaphysics and stuff like that, which is why I like it a lot. But there's another school of Buddhism called Mahayana, which is, I feel like it's more influenced by that magical thinking. That's my opinion. And I also think it's kind of subjective to the same flaws that collectivism has. Mm. But I kind of trolled off. What was your original question? Oh, drugs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, drugs. Like, is it all just that their own, you know, personal power? Or, like, do they use exogenous tools?
Quicker
methods.
I guess the reason I kind of trolled off is that Mahayana, that translates to the greater vehicle, meaning their goal is to become a bodhisattva, meaning they want to get more people out of suffering. They will stay in the cycle of samsara to get people out of suffering.
Mm.
And there's also, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, I think Vajrayana, which is also known as Zen Buddhism, and that's supposed to be the diamond way. That's supposed to be the quickest way out of samsara, basically, to get some form of enlightenment. And Zen Buddhism is interesting. Like, I never really looked much into Zen Buddhism. I like Alan Watts, but Alan Watts kind of covers everything. So, Alan Watts goes all over the place. But
yeah,
they think that Zen is supposed to be a sped up way of doing it. But as far as drugs and stuff like that, it's frowned upon. It's frowned upon because that's not your natural state. Like, the drugs, they fade away. And there's more noise you have to sort through when it comes to drugs.
Because
you can hallucinate.
The aftermath. Yeah.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Like, if you get addicted, then you've got a new form of attachment that's gonna fuck you up.
Yeah. So. Yeah. The worldly attachment. Damn.
So drugs are... They're looked up as a way of, like, you're messing up your mind for a little while and you're not really doing anything useful. Like, some Mahayana monks and clergy that I've heard speak, they focus more on, like, rituals and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they believe that if you die, like, in a state of overdosing on drugs, it's really bad because they fixate more on the state your mind is in before you're dying, because that's what you're going to gravitate towards in your next life.
Oh.
And basically, since your mind is kind of in a state of high ignorance, because drugs tend to lower your ability to focus clearly and be, lucid.
Yeah, so, it's kind of counterproductive.
Yeah, they worry that you could fall back into, like you said earlier, a lizard. You're going to become something with less awareness, which could end up being some type of animal, and you don't want to go into the animal realm again.
Yeah, I can see that, why they would see that as a less legit form of meditation or whatever. Just counterproductive to what they're trying to achieve, or what people would need to achieve under meditation. So substances is a no-go.
Yeah, it's a no-go. Like, some people, they take it to the next level and they wonder if they should be using antidepressants, which that's actually kind of ironic, because when I was in my younger days, and I actually went to a protest when I was a teenager. It was a Scientology protest, and I think I went because I'd heard that they basically disavows psychiatry and psychology, so I went. Plus, it was part of a 4chan thing back then, so I got swept up in that whole thing. But I was young and dumb.
Yeah, it seems like a common thing for religions to reject other forms of help available to us, like, as you know, modern society and all that, and medication, and even other forms of religion. It's like competitive.
Yeah.
But
there's the notion of collective egos, which is kind of it may be kind of a complicated way to put it, but the way the ego functions is to protect the self. So if you have a bunch of selves, which can be people, could be corporations, could be governments, could be religious factions, anything, they will have a collective ego, or to a degree, like a cultural ego in a way. So they want their way of things, of their way to be the way that things are done.
Right, the only way. Yeah, they don't want anything outside tainting their structure.
Yeah, exactly. And it's frustrating. I get it, because, you know, Christianity just got some cool things, and Christians historically have done some cool things. Like, they did a lot of, when it came to ending slavery and stuff like that. So Christians have done awesome things too, but they also can get kind of trapped in that way of thinking. Like, there was this one documentary called Dharma Brothers, and I forgot what state this was in. I think it was in one of the Bible Belt states, but they ended up bringing Buddhism and meditation to these prisons, and the inmates were making progress. Like, they were changing. Like, some of them would just burst into tears because regret for what they'd done, or seeing things in a new way, or finally just having some type of emotional catharsis.
Mm.
And eventually the program, unfortunately, got shut down because it wasn't a Christian program. So Christians came and they knocked it out. So, and
yeah,
I get it. Like, you know, if you believe in God and everything, that's great. But at the same time, I don't think that it's very godly to want to sabotage another person's improvement. Because, yeah, even though they are prisoners, you know, like, if they can change, that's great. And if they can learn to regret what they've done, that's even better. So,
yeah, I mean, eventually you just gotta, I mean, if you do a shitty thing and you're still here, it doesn't do you any good to keep dwelling on it, because you're just shortchanging yourself and what your potential could be from that point on. So, I don't know. I think that my criticism of Christianity, it's like a narrow-minded, narrow road that's very restrictive in how in achieving the path of, what is it, redemption? You know, it's like their way or the highway. So yeah. That's my putting down that.
See, and when I was a Christian, I had way too many questions about the religion, because that's kind of why it got harder and harder for me to believe in as I got older. And mm-hmm. now, I'm just kind of, I think of it as like an agnostic. I mean, if there is a God, it's like, okay, well, cool. If he's not there, then it's like, well, that happens too. So
yeah, I'm not a huge fan of like organized religion as far as going and attending a church and going every Sunday and putting on a face and all that. And like the whole church thing. It's like, if God is with me, then he's with me. I don't have to, you know, the church of the self. Just, I don't have to go to church to talk to God.
The self. Yeah. That sounds a little narcissistic.
Like, they're supposed to be like a little bit put a God in you. Otherwise, you're not able to like connect, right? Is that kind of thing?
And that's something that's
like,
common.
Why do I need to go to church to achieve that? That's not.
When I was younger, I liked learning about all these different religions. I was really open minded, dude. So. That's something that was a pattern in human thinking that I noticed when it came to Hinduism and Christianity, like the God self or the Brahma or the Atma and all of that, the Holy Spirit. It seems mm-hmm. like these are all kind of the same idea that different ideologies are trying to put words to. So mm-hmm. Christians do believe that the Holy Spirit is in us, and that's kind of how the God spark can give us guidance and everything like that.
Yeah. So why do I need to go to a church to look at people, to give up a tithe and all that stuff? It's like, it's just a money grab.
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends. Like, mm-hmm. you don't start off knowing everything. Like, you're still a seed that has to grow.
Gotcha, yeah.
So you just got to hope watering you are putting the right things in the soil.
Yeah, and you're dependent on who's standing up there talking.
Yeah.
And what message they want to send out that day. I used to attend a really big church here in town with my cousins, because they went. And it's like a really popular one. And it just seemed like a big show to me. I mean, people would get hyped up. It was like a pep rally every Sunday. So I was hyped up to go. But looking back on that, it didn't seem Yeah, it was just like people were going because they wanted the experience of being there and being around people and being enthusiastic and all that.
Yeah, it's a social function, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm not saying this is a way to diminish religion or church, because I understand why these things exist, and, you know, they're important. Yeah. They're important in guiding cultures and guiding the future of minds if they're making the right choices. But when it came to going to church, do you feel like you ever gained anything at all from attending any time you went?
Yeah, especially as a kid, because, you know, we're more into going things that exciting things. So it was pretty exciting for me at the time. So I guess it was like a positive influence on me in those days. But I mean, we were going to the clubs the Saturday night before, so it wasn't like actually keeping us from any shenanigans we shouldn't have been getting into. It was just like repenting the next day. Oh, I went to church on Sunday. Yay.
Yeah. See, and I think that's kind of a bad habit too, that it can get
it's a bad cycle. Yeah.
If you're just repenting but you're not sorry, because, you know, I have friends that say that they just say they're sorry every 5 minutes, but they don't do anything differently.
I'm sorry. Like, well, sorry. Yeah.
It doesn't.
We're like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah. It's kind of diminishing in a way. It diminishes the value of your word. And for Christians, that's kind of something that they can run into. And then they can get into the whole... There's a lot of pit traps that Christianity has that people can fall into. Not to say the Buddhism is perfect or anything. It's got its flaws, too. When you start bringing in karma, like... One thing that's kind of shady, you'll have situations where people will have birds for sale. And basically, you can buy the bird's freedom. And you'll get good karma because you freed the bird. And it's like, yeah, that's a shell game. You're not gonna redistribute karmic wealth or anything like that. So.
Poor bird. Poor bird can't even fend for himself. He's just out there lost.
Yeah.
So. Worse off, probably.
But yeah, when I was younger, I used to go to church, and I didn't really get anything out of it. But my grandmother was kind of a bad teacher when it came to religion. I was 5 years old and always worried about not being baptized, so I always thought I was going to go to hell. Which, you know, there's always like a benefit to the negative. So now I look at it as fine because it gave me a lot of insight into religion and human thinking. So that was what I was able to take from it. But it had gotten so bad when I was younger that I don't know exactly where the belief comes from. I think it's in Judaism. I think they believe you become a man once you're 13, which means that your sins are no longer
on your parents.
Yeah, I was about to say it backwards, but yeah, your sins are no longer on your parents, and now they're on your own. So if you sin and you die, you go to hell. So I had it so bad when I was younger. I was like, man, I hope I die before I'm 13 because I'm not baptized.
Oh my God.
So my grandmother was really bad at like conveying religion. She was
all the negative shit.
Old country black woman, so.
So that kind of soured you on Christianity after that?
It was part of it. As I got older and stuff like that, you know, you start thinking and questioning things. Your mind becomes more individualized and you become more autonomous, so you start wondering about things.
Yeah.
It's like, and so I can do all these bad things and then just say, I'm sorry, and then, you know, I get hit by a bus and everything's fine. It's like, is it like Star Wars where I just throw a bad person down a well and I'm completely redeemed? Or
I think they say you have to accept Jesus into your heart and that he sacrificed himself for your sins and all that. So by accepting Jesus, then you're clean slated.
Then Jesus gives you the credit card, basically.
There you go.
To rack up the moral debt.
Start over.
See, in Buddhism,
just accept Jesus every 5 years. And,
yeah. Like, and that's kind of the difference with Buddhism, is that Buddhism, it accepts that there is evil in the world and people can do evil. Buddhism kind of argues that they do it out of, I guess, ignorance. Maybe you can say, well, all of the reasons that we suffer, they can do it out of attachment, ignorance, or aversion. So with evil, the difference there is that you can do something bad, but just like when the good wears off, you start to get karma from your other actions. Same thing with the bad. Like, if you do something bad, then the bad things are going to come back to you at an appropriate amount. It's not going to be that, hey, you were a good person, but, you know, you were Native American before Europeans got over here. You didn't know anything about Jesus, so sorry about that. You got to go to purgatory. It's nothing like that in Buddhism. It's once that bad karma gets burnt off, then that's it. Yeah, you have a chance for your good karma to start ripening. So if you do something bad, then, and even then, bad is kind of, it's a little different in Buddhism, because it's bad because it's going to make you suffer. So harming another person is bad because now you've got bad karma coming your way. And the states of mind that you're going to be in that lead you to harm somebody, they're not fun states to be in. You don't want to be angry. That's not a pleasant state to be in. So
it's more about like a balance.
Yeah, that's to a degree. That's why Buddhism is always called the middle way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that.
So.
Interesting stuff.
When it comes to morality and Hinduism, that's another thing that's interesting too, because they believe that we're basically God, but split up into different individuals. So the illusion is that we're separate, and that's kind of when you get into the whole oneness with everybody and all that. So, you know, you can see why hippies like these ideas and stuff quite a bit. But Hinduism believes that. So when you're hurting somebody, you're really just hurting yourself. That's actually one of my favorite short stories. There's a short story by a guy named Andy Weir. It's called The Egg. Mm-hmm. It's pretty popular now. I think they've made a lot of videos about it on YouTube. So I would recommend either watching the video or reading that one. It's a good way to kind of alleviate some negative emotions that you may experience, because you can experience hatred or bitterness towards somebody that's wronged you, but you kind of realize that it's not really a point in holding on to those things.
Yeah, it's just wasting energy, yeah. Emotional energy, and your thought process and all that. Just, you could be doing other better things, more productive things.
Yeah, definitely. Because even, you know, in Christianity, they're right about that too. Like, some of their practices are actually pretty close to Buddhist practices as far as like the benefits that the mind would have from it. Because mm-hmm. Buddhism focuses more on your mental state, whereas Christianity is a little different because you're trying to do what God wants mostly, and it's hard to figure mm-hmm. out what God wants. And
well, I find that a lot of people, I've heard it outlined or summarized as people are drawn to Christianity because of the, because it's a patriarchy. It's like the father or whatever that's raising you through the Bible and stuff.
I mean, in a sense, yeah, like traditionally. So it's like
guidelines.
I guess to expand on the truth I see in that, when it comes to the traditional format of a family, yeah, usually it's going to be men leaving. And unfortunately, nowadays, we don't really have nuclear families anymore. Mm-hmm. Everybody's, you know, everyone gets divorced pretty quick, and families don't last that long. So it's another form of trying to get some type of wisdom out of the world, or to get some type of bearings or orientation, is to have mm-hmm. religion, to have something that can clear things up for you. Because you have to think about, like, you ever heard the term tabula rasa?
Mm-hmm.
Like blank slate. Well, that mm-hmm. I forgot who made that up.
I've heard it in psychology.
Yeah, God, I don't know. I want to say Thomas Locke, but I think that might be wrong. I don't remember who it was.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Came up with tabula rasa, but basically the idea is that you're born into a world as a blank slate, and all these things get imprinted on you. There was another German philosopher who had something similar. I think it was called thrownness or something like that.
Thrownness.
Yeah, that's kind of hood.
That's thrown. Yeah, thrown.
But thrownness is basically, it's similar. It's like you're kind of thrusted into the world, and mm-hmm. you got to figure out what's going on. And depending on how you're born, it can be like jumping out of a moving car. You're rolling, and you don't know what the fuck's going on. Mom's on crack. Mm-hmm. Dad's, you know, dad's like overseas shooting, you know, whatever. So. We have a chaotic
in psychology,
world.
They had the school of thought of whether we're born with, you know, all our characteristics, like the genetic part of it, or if we're blank slates, and we're completely formed by our environment.
Yeah.
Those were the two dueling
the nature
thoughts.
Versus nurture.
Nature versus nurture. That's exactly it.
And then epigenetics has kind of thrown a wrench into that, because now we're like, hell yeah, it's kind of both.
You can change your genes and your mind.
See, in Buddhism, like, because these religions, like, they were ways of making sense of the world back then mm-hmm. when we didn't really know anything. You have to think just being born out in the woods and hoping that the other living stuff out here doesn't decide to eat you with its face. It's hard to make mm-hmm. sense of what's up and down. So religion had that way of providing stability, like a lot of.
Well, stability and like
knowledge too.
Civility,
there used to be, like, schools,
yeah.
And they kept
knowledge.
You know, they were a form of like soft government. They're useful for keeping people around before the, you know, God is like the what predated the NSA. It was always listening. Mm-hmm. So,
but it's still like historically, Christianity has attempted to wipe out the competing religions. Like if you look at the Aztecs and the Mayans, and then they had their own way of doing things, and their own religions and their own gods, and Christianity just viewed them as like savages. It's like, this shit ain't right. Because they had like their, I don't know, their games and stuff where they would play like these crazy games, and then the losing team would get like castrated or just completely killed off. It was like high stakes savagery.
I think the
they would like sacrifice their babies and shit, and it was just all kinds of fucked up shit.
Now, there's another ideology that's makes you stunning and brave if you start sacrificing your babies.
Right?
But
the belief that they would please their god by doing that, that's just crazy to me.
Yeah, it was crazy then, it's crazy now.
But for them, it was their way of life.
That's all they knew.
That's all they knew.
But they also had a different way of thinking about things too. I'm not 100% sure, but I do think that the Aztecs did believe in like reincarnation or rebirth, and those are two terms that people kind of blur a lot. The best difference I've gotten between them is that reincarnation is more like the idea that you maintain your identity, but in a different form. Mm. Rebirth is, it all gets lost because, you know, you're not exactly your thoughts, which that's kind of something a lot of people don't always like to think about, because that can kind of lead to some schizophrenic thinking.
Yeah.
It's like, well, who the hell, you know, who's saying all these things in my head? It's like, well,
but yeah,
it's you, but it's not you.
Yeah, there's a great quote. I forget who said it. It's like, you are not, you don't have your own thoughts, I think. You are not your thoughts. Your thoughts make you. Or you don't make your own thoughts. Your thoughts make you. Something like that.
Yeah.
It's like, we all have heard, you know, everything that we've heard is what forms our mind. But it didn't originate with us. Something to that effect. And it's like chicken and the egg, you know?
Yeah.
Like which one came first?
There's different phrases that kind of embody that way of thinking. Like, we all stand on the shoulders of giants. Because when you can think about it with our technology, like all the things that the people that have come before us have created so that our lives can be so cushy and stuff like that now. It's amazing to think how great life is now opposed to what it was when we were a young species. Well, we're still a young species, but when we were a much younger species, I should say. So.
Yeah, we were not as well connected as far as like knowledge and understanding things. Like now you just hit a button or just talk to your phone and it'll come up with five different answers to whatever you're asking.
Yeah.
From all these different sources. So it's rough, because I was just thinking this. It's like all of the like listening to podcasts, right? And learning about other people and subjects and stuff like that. It's like it's forming our minds. So it's become increasingly important for us to be intentional about what we're looking for and who we're looking at. Like the source. Consider the source. Consider the information.
Yeah, definitely. There's a popular YouTuber I listen to. His channel is called Infinite Waters. And he had one of the most, like, to me, it was like one of the best way to articulate what meditation is about. He said that meditation is about becoming comfortable in the void. And that explains exactly how Buddhism got me out of nihilism. So, like, you know, nowadays we call nihilism the black pill. But I would say that I consider, like, Buddhism, it was kind of like the clear pill. A friend of mine, he made a joke, so what, like a placebo? And you could take that as, like, disrespectful to Buddhism, but at the same time, Buddhism doesn't take itself too seriously. Like, Alan Watts has even said that when it comes to the cones and the riddles that they use in Zen Buddhism, it's almost like they're almost kind of funny. Like, and that's kind of why I kind of laugh at all the absurd things going on in the world, because it's just
everybody taking shit so seriously.
Yeah, and when you kind of see like how crazy all of it really gets, it's like, what the hell's going on? But that's just how the world is designed. We're all limited by our own perspective, and we can only operate from that for the most part. But he actually brought up something too that's similar to what you were saying about monitoring. Just like you want to try to keep your mind clean or your body healthy, right, and things like that, you want to keep your other senses clean. So, and that's something too that goes more into like Buddhist cosmology and stuff like that. They believe that the self starts, like, if you still have that attachment to come back to the world, you start getting senses and ways to get the world. So like hearing, smelling, thinking, and all these different sense gates is what they call them. So you do want to monitor what you're taking in, because it does affect your worldview.
Like, yeah, definitely.
It's hard. There's no one size fits all. Because when I was younger, at least, that was always the debate. Like, do video games make people violent? It's like, well, no. Yeah. Do movies make people violent? No. But
yeah, we're a little more complex than that.
Yeah, it's a little more complex, and it's crazy because, you know, nowadays the way the country's polarized, I've joked before that it's interesting that you basically just have two flavors that indoctrinate people. You know, is it CNN or Fox, or, you know, what's your brand of bullshit?
Yeah, brand of bullshit?
Like, but, you know, but me, I'm a libertarian, so I can be pretty honest about it, and I think it's just kind of a status game that people are playing. But it's with any ideology, if you start getting too attached to it, and you're going to do some evil. Like, and you can also veer from what it's originally about if you misinterpret things. Like, language is another thing that it makes it harder for people to kind of clearly communicate their ideas, because we see that a lot when it comes into government and religion. People try to interpret what was written or what law went into effect, and before you know it, they come out with something completely ass backwards.
Yeah, it's like all that interpretation kind of just muddies up the thing. It's like, why can't you just write it just in clear terms? Like, that's one thing that a lot of people criticize Trump for, is that his language is meant to be dumbed down for stupid people, and he's stupid and all this shit. But really, he's just speaking plainly, without any pretense, without any nuance, without any doublespeak. Which, if you look at the previous speeches of his predecessors, it's like, I'm sitting there for 5 minutes trying to figure out what the fuck is he trying to say? What is he actually saying? Like, I'm sitting there with the goddamn dictionary, and it's like, I've never had to do that with any of the Trump speeches. And it's like, he's just being upfront about everything.
Yeah, I think it's harder to lie with fewer syllables, and liberals like to lie in many syllables. So
yeah, pretty much it's misdirection. It's like blah 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 blah, 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 all this fluttery language. And it's
I was
meant
laughing
to
when
feel
Bernie
good
Sanders
and sound
was,
good, but yeah.
Did you see that episode of Joe Rogan where Bernie Sanders was on?
No, I didn't.
There's a point where Joe Rogan asked him, he's like, so what do you say to people that are concerned that they won't be able to keep their own money under your presidency? If you are president. Uh-huh. Sanders ends up saying something. He starts it off with, well... Then there's a pause. And I'm like, God damn it. Here I am trying to be like open-minded. And I'm like...
Oh, here he goes. Here he goes. Yeah, there's always a little spin. But speaking of Bernie, so you watched that new Veritas
video? Before I forget, because, you know, if I was still a leftist, if socialism and all that stuff, if I didn't learn what I did learn, and I thought that worked, like you could just control everything to make the utopia. I probably would have been voting for Yang. I think Andrew Yang would have been who would have appealed to my brand of bullshit if I was still a leftist. But even then, like, I've been trying to read more about something he said. He brought up this thing that he brought up a few right-wing economists and cited that they thought that we could have a universal basic income. Mm-hmm. And he brought up a guy named Milton Friedman, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what's the difference here, because Milton Friedman had something that he called a negative income tax, and I'm still kind of trying to figure out the details on what exactly a negative income tax is, which if you start thinking about those words as is, you can kind of see how government just confuses people just so they can get your money. UBI, the whole freedom dividend and all that, that's just more shell games. Like, if that was really the case, that he wanted to put $1,000 into every American's pocket, all you have to do is reduce the taxes. Just go through the tax brackets, reduce the taxes, and you got it.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, just let me keep my fucking money as much as possible, and I'll decide what to do with it.
Yeah, and going back to Bernie, like, I don't know why everyone has this idea that Bernie Sanders' policies are going to help poor people. Like, if you look at his tax plan back in 2016, he wanted people that were in the bottom tax bracket to pay more. And for the middle class, like, I think people making $30,000 to $100,000, which it makes no sense that that's considered the same class, because those are all very different lifestyles. Making $30,000 mm-hmm. a year versus $90,000 a year, very different mm-hmm. lives. But mm-hmm. for everybody across the board, if you were making more than $30,000, Bernie Sanders wanted to take a third of your income federally. So who knows what that would have been if you live in a state with state income tax. People don't think about the fact that you're also paying taxes when, like, you have to do license registration and all these fees and other things. Like, it's kind of crazy that the government is, you know, ever needs more money, because they make money off every transaction. So,
pretty much. And they're so inefficient at doing what they're supposed to do as it is. I don't see that making more laws and making things more complicated is going to help that.
Yeah, it definitely won't. And that's something that, you know, Trump's not perfect, but Trump, it does make me laugh hearing his speeches when he tries to dumb it down for people. Did you see the windmill speech?
The windmill speech? No.
Yeah, that one was beautiful. He's like, you ever seen that many dead birds?
Oh my God.
Yeah, sometimes Trump just tries to be like super straightforward. Like he speaks to the country like we're idiots, but we're sitting here about to go to a civil war over which bathroom people should be using, so he's not all that wrong. But what else did Trump say? There was back when they were trying to obstruct the border security issue. Trump, I think I heard a video of him saying something like, we got wire going up, it's really good wire.
Like, good wire. It's really good. It's really going to help.
This wire is the best. It's not like that China wire. But, Trump's done some great things, though. So I look forward to... Yeah,
he's trimmed a lot of the fat on our government.
Yeah, I definitely look forward to see what he does in his second term. So.
Oh, there will be a second term. You can guarantee it.
Yeah. Me and a friend have been kind of playing with a theory, because it's getting harder and harder for Democrats to be reasonable, because the left has just hijacked what their party was going to be.
Mm.
Like, there's a thing going on now where I think AOC is criticizing the party for not being progressive enough. So she's not paying her campaigning dues.
Which, it's always about one thing. Of course the socialist
doesn't want to pay their bills.
Shit. Her fake ass. Ugh. But yeah, I was going to talk about that Veritas guy.
Yeah.
Like him, watching him reminded me of the Joker movie. It's like, not the Joker himself, not Joaquin Phoenix's character, but like the people that were all around and burning cars at the end and like fucking shit up. Like they were ready for something to just any excuse to fucking just cause chaos.
Yeah.
That was that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the Joker was good about being really subtle when it came to problems and not politicizing them, but they're all little things that you would blow up nowadays into a politicized issue. Like Thomas Wayne, he ran into an issue where he was getting Me Too'd. Some mentally ill woman said that, oh no, you slept with me. He's like, no, I didn't. Mm-hmm. He's like, no, you should believe all women. So.
Mm. Oh yeah, I see what you're saying.
Same thing with, hey, I'm mentally ill, I shouldn't have a gun. It's like, okay. And he still has the fucking gun.
See, I need to go back and rewatch this, because I didn't watch it with any kind of, you know, I wasn't looking for all these nuances into it. So I'm going to have to go back and look at it. But yeah, you're right. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, they're subtle. And it was done really well, because nowadays it feels like movies have messages in them. And
it's too in your face. Like, it's too blatant.
Yeah, so, like there's
but that's good.
There's one show on Netflix. I watched the pilot of. I forgot what it's called, but I call it the Woke Apocalypse. These kids, like high school kids, they start off in like a zombie apocalypse. I don't remember the name of it, but they're already using like all the Marxist intersectionality and privilege and all that language.
Oh so, God!
I'm like, Lord.
People are so tired of that shit. I'm surprised that. I mean, they're just going to tank, because nobody's going to want to watch that anymore, you know? People want entertainment to escape all this shit. And they're just popping that in there in the entertainment.
I mean, I complain about it, but at the same time, I don't know exactly what would be the solution. Like, did you hear that they want to ban politics, like athletes, from bringing their political opinions to the Olympics?
Well, they should, I think. Because they get paid to play the sport, play the game, and do it well, and that's it. Why? What are they... I mean, that's not a platform for them to put their politics out there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can agree with that. Like, I mean, it's in the contract.
Shut up and throw the ball!
If it's in the contract that you can't do this, then if you don't like it, you know, don't sign the contract. But
yeah.
Yeah, like...
What's that guy's...
Go on.
The Nike guy's name? That one that everybody talks about?
I'm not good with sports, so I'm going to spin out the wrong
the guy that guy that took a knee, and then he's, like, glorified for it. He's, like, the main one. The one that started it. I forget. Forget his fucking name. Irrelevant piece of shit. Anyway.
I don't know. There was one. He's the one that was dating the activist from Black Lives Matter and all that. I don't remember his name. I don't know which athlete it was, because I don't watch sports, so I just don't fucking know. I don't watch sports, so I don't care to, like, you know, trading Pokemon cards to someone. I wouldn't know if I've started naming all the athletes out there. But yeah, going back to politics being in everything, I don't really know exactly how it can't be, because if you want to talk about your worldview, it's harder for it not to show up, you know? Because I think nowadays people...
Really? Like, I don't know, because when I see sports... Are you talking about sports? Or did I...
I'm talking about in general. Like, with movies, with friendships, too. Like, if you start talking about things with people, it's difficult, because if... Like, let's say you were like us, where you started realizing that, all the stuff that we thought we knew was wrong. It's all backwards, because the way the media's been corrupted.
But in movies, these are productions that are created by a very small circle of people, that they have that intention of pushing said messages, because the actors themselves they're just playing the role, and they're just playing along because they want their check.
Well, you can't have more control over what the actors would say, but as far as not having some type of message that you can pull from the movie, that's impossible, because
You're talking about as the viewer applying their own view on what they're watching.
Well, even then, too, because, like, if you have a certain character that thinks one way or another, you can probably play thought police, which the left and the right do like to do right now. You can figure out where someone's views align, and it's not that hard. Like, hell, I've been in conversations, too, where I say I don't hate Trump, and everyone gives me this mean eye, like, are you one of them? It's like, Jesus.
Yeah, you definitely view the world with your own, like, little lens that you've created, right? Yeah. Like, people view the world through their own eyes.
And it's natural, too, because if you want to have people around you you trust, you want to have the same values. So it's human nature to look for that in people. When you listen to them talk, you want to make sure, you know, what frequency are they on? Do we vibe? Do we have the same values? And even at more of a primitive level, it's like, can I trust this person? You know? So
you're always those things. For me, it's like, I want to avoid the echo chambers. As good as it may feel to have a conversation with somebody that's totally vibing with me and agreeing with me and we're going on and on, I would rather feel a little bit uncomfortable talking with somebody that's not in a complete agreement, because then you can still glean a little bit of insight, you know, just listening to opposing views. It's like a back and forth. But keeping the higher goal in mind of, I'm going to learn something from this, as opposed to, I'm going to win this conversation, because then you're treading the territory of, you know, competition and negative. You're not going to win that battle. You know what I mean? It's like, there, people are always going to have different points of views. So for me, I think it's I avoid echo chambers.
I try to. At least for me, I always try to question what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So I always try to, like, look at things from the opposing perspective. Because, you know, and it's kind of the weird thing. Is like, you see that with the left and the right. Like, you sincerely had no idea what was going on planet Earth, and you watch CNN and watch Fox. You would think that, okay, so one of these guys, their job is just to say the opposite of what that guy says.
Pretty much. The truth is somewhere in between, in the middle.
Yeah, and I think that's where a lot of moderates sit, that they, if they're not like history nerds or people that like figuring out that all the different forms of economics, like, you know, Austrian economics, Chicago school, or, you know, leftist style economics like Keynesian and wealth redistribution and all that shit, then it's hard to figure out what should you like in politics. And like, well, I don't know, that person looks kind of like me, so I should vote for them. And it's like, well, that's not that's not useful.
Yeah, that's what that was one thing I was thinking about in movies now, is that they don't leave any nuance for the viewer to connect with a character based on their character. It has to, now today, it has to be something that's totally visible and totally in your face, like the character being transgender or gay or a minority or this, that, and the other, or disabled. And it's like they put that at the forefront, and then you kind of lose the substance in what movie, what entertainment used to be.
Yeah, for me, I don't like the idea of doing all these inversions. I think that that's kind of where you mess up stories.
Like Black Little Mermaid?
Like Black Little Mermaid, when most black people can't swim. I mean, you know, me included, I'm not a fucking swim. But, what? And now a lot of black girls don't like getting their hair wet, so being a mermaid, yeah, that makes its own type of hell.
What is she doing? Why would she be black? I'm all for historical accuracy. It's like it's just taking it a step too far for somebody to be able to just enjoy the show, and then all of a sudden it's black, or it's something that's out of character for that character of what you know of that character, and it kind of takes away from the story. I don't know. It's just like it's like a distraction.
Yeah, it is. I mean, which that's why I don't like the idea of like just swapping them for political sake, because you can make a new story with that person. Like, you can do that if you want to make like some.
Yeah, they could do a side story. Why does it have to be a replacement?
Like with Ariel, like I don't think you need to do a retelling of that. And then, you know, some people argue that it's racist because there's no minorities. But if you look at the origin stories for these races, then they really didn't see people of, you know, different types of people. So what do they know about a black person? Like, you don't hear any, as far as I know, I don't know about any African folklore that has mermaids, you know?
Mermaids, yeah.
It's going to be people that were sailing and close to the coast and stuff like that, where all their folklore comes out. That's where you get all these ideas from, so.
Right.
Like if you want to have, like, a strong female character, that's good, like, in Star Wars, because I like Star Wars a lot, and they messed it up so badly. If you wanted to have, like, a really cool female character, there's a lot of them in Star Wars. Like, this girl I used to know when I was younger, she was a huge Star Wars nerd, and there were a lot of Jedi and stuff that she knew about that were female, and they were all just organically in the universe. Like, you know, I'm going to nerd out for a second, but Ahsoka from the Clone Wars, that would have been a great female protagonist to have a series about, instead of trying to inject like a character that just does everything without a problem.
Right. She just like all of a sudden was able to use the Force, and that came out of nowhere. So bad. Yeah. Whereas like everyone before her had to like train for years.
Yeah, like a lot of the new one, it just didn't make any sense.
I haven't watched any of the new ones. Like, not since the old Luke appeared at the closing scene of whatever that movie was that I don't remember. And that was the last one.
Okay, so we're coming up on the 1 hour mark. So I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. We totally missed the mark on what our topic was.
It always comes back to fucking politics and entertainment.
Well, it's hard to get away from if you're talking about what's going on in the world. You know, you're going to share your opinion. But
it's all good. It's all good.
So we got away from.
I wanted to ask you
dreams. We can do this we can do dreams in another episode.
Yeah, we've got some cool dream stuff coming up.
So this is the prequel to the dreams episode.
Yeah. I did want to ask you if you watched Ready Player One though.
I kind of fell asleep on it.
Okay, well, that's your homework.
Ready Player One.
Yeah,
that's a good one. I was in and out, so I had ingested some things allegedly that would make me a bad Buddhist. But yeah, I watched it and I was falling asleep. But I remember there's a lot of references in it. I'd wake up and hear stuff. I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah, it's got a lot of cool retro stuff in it.
But yeah, we're going to go ahead and finish up this episode. So everybody that tuned in, we appreciate you listening. If you'd like to support us, if you enjoyed your time here, please give us a like and a subscribe. You'll hear from us in the next episode.
Peace out.